those are the apologies that we have, written apologies. Let's get to the agenda. Item number 3, tabling of negotiating mandate. I don't feel that we need to stick in that item, because members will recall that we written to the department that is that we need to get a written responses to negotiating mandate for the objective of traditional cohesion and leadership bill. So the department needs to give us the written responses.
Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members. Thank you for this opportunity. We have submitted written responses to the committee. We will be guided by the committee on how we should handle them. It's a 22-page document which lists the issues raised per province and our response to each one of them. But a formal submission has been made as such too.
We all of us have this document? This one? The chairperson? Do you have this document? Thank you. Can you give to everyone? Okay, thank you very much. Can we circle so that we can allow the department to carry on? Can you set it down? Okay, thank you very much. Over to you, sir.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. As I indicated, the document lists the comments received per province, and on the extreme right we have a column in which we indicate the response from the department. With your permission, Chairperson, I'll ask my colleague, Dr. Renati Bester, to talk to the comments and the responses from the department.
Morning, Chair and Honourable Members. Thank you for the opportunity. And may I also say on behalf of the Department, thanks for the provincial legislature's processes that they went through and the thorough public consultations. It was quite exhausting to attend all of those, but they've done it. Chair, as a general comment in the beginning, of the 9 provinces, there are 3 that are supporting the bill without any amendments. And then there are 5 who are supporting the bill with proposed amendments. And there's 1 province that we will get to later that's rejecting the bill, but they also make proposals on amendments to the bill, which the committee will probably discuss when we get to there. I just want to ask, Chair, do we go through all the comments or do you want us to focus on specific ones? But in some instances, the provinces would propose a specific amendment, in others it's just a comment where there's no specific amendment. And to assist members, if you look at the third column, the one that says under the heading provincial comment, we've indicated in bold in the beginning of each of them, whether it's an amendment that's proposed or whether it's just a comment.
Can we focus only to those comments that are made by these five provinces?
Thanks, Chair. We're starting then with the Eastern Cape. You members will see that we've quoted the exact words that appears in the negotiating mandate. In the case of the Eastern Cape, the province votes in favour of the bill and mandates the Eastern Cape delegate to the NCOP to negotiate within the following parameters. I will refer to items. It's a far left column where we have numbered each specific comment. So item one is about the name of the bill. It's what the Eastern Cape province is saying is one should consider the name of the bill and that it remain the current name of the Framework Act, which is Traditional Leadership and Governance Framework Bill. Now, I want to talk to this one a little bit because it's a comment that also appears in other provinces in their negotiating mandates. I think in earlier meetings when the bill was originally presented to the committee, we pointed out something to the honourable members. And though where we presented also to the provincial legislatures, we also tried to explain the difference between the Khoi and San leadership and the traditional leadership. In short, the section 212 or chapter 12 of the constitution makes provision for traditional leadership. But if you look at the provisions of the section and you look at the interim constitution that preceded it, and you look at the Constitutional Court certification judgment, then it says clearly that that chapter 12 talks about traditional leadership that existed at the time when the Constitution came into operation and were recognized as such. Even the interim constitution was actually much better in that sense because it clearly stated that recognized in terms of law. Now, we all know that our traditional leaders, as we know them, were recognized in terms of law. But the Khoi and the San were never recognized before in terms of law. So although they may be referred to as traditional leaders, they are not, in our opinion, traditional leaders as contemplated in Chapter 12 of the Constitution. So what's very important in any piece of legislation, in your short title, the name of the bill, is that it reflects the content, the true content of the bill. And if we look at that bill, it deals with traditional leadership that we are familiar with, and it deals with Khoisan leadership, which is the new part to the bill. And therefore, we believe the traditional course on leadership bill, as it's currently reflected in the short title, is the correct short title to indicate exactly what the content is. Then, item number two, the province talks about the structures. For example, they say it should be then the National House of Traditional Leaders and not the National House of Traditional Khoisan Leaders. It's the same argument as above. The Khoi and San people, once they are recognized as leaders, they will become part of the structures. And therefore, the structures, the names of the structures will also change. The item three, the province says that the position of principal traditional leader should be abolished. I think we also spoke about this in one of the previous meetings, Chair, that the principal traditional leader is not a position that traditional leaders can apply for. It's a limited position. It talks about the paramountcies. If we go back a little bit in the history, and Mr. Sitole is here from the National House, but he was also, I think honourable members know him, he was also the Secretary of the Commission on Traditional Leadership, Disputes and Claims. Yeah, at the back. The Nhlapo Commission investigated paramountcies to determine whether they meet the requirements for kingships and queenships or not. And they found certain of them met all the requirements, and they will continue to be kingships. Some of them, five, this is sorry, did not meet all the requirements. And therefore, once those particular incumbents pass on, those five will become principal traditional leadership. It has already happened in the Free State, where the incumbents pass on, and those are now principal traditional communities. So it's a creation of law to accommodate those specific paramountcies. It's not a general position that anybody can apply for. So it will only be those and nobody else. And it is to make provision for those particular ones. So we believe that at this stage, the principal traditional leadership should be retained in the bill, as it currently is also in the existing Framework Act. Then also part of item 3 on the next page, on page 2, the province proposes that Terminology like headman and headwoman and senior traditional leader should be replaced by chief and senior chief respectively. Honourable members, over the years we have been told that those terminology is seen as derogative and is not used anymore in any legislation anywhere, so we do not support that particular amendment. Item 4 talks about the proportional representation. The problem is that representation on the National House should be on proportional basis. Now, the representation in the National House, at the current, as it stands at the moment, says it is 3 persons per province, elected by the provincial houses. Obviously, there's no traditional leaders in the Western Cape, so they do not have a representation on the National House. And then in the case of Gauteng, there's only 2 people and they're automatically members of the National House. All the other provinces will elect 3. It's the same principle that is used for the NCOP. It does not matter how many people there are in a particular province, the NCOP provincial representatives are the same per province. So we also do not support that proposal. Then item 5, they're talking about the Khoisan branches. And they are they're saying that instead of using the word branches, we should refer to a clan council. Now, we have a long explanation there that honourable members can read, but just to keep it short, the National Khoisan Council, during our discussions with them over many, many years, they were part of the drafting of this legislation on the Khoisan part. They refer to their subgroupings, if I can call it that, as branches and not as clans. I think the word clan is a very limited terminology. In fact, if you look at the last paragraph of that page, we are saying there that in anthropological context, clan refers to persons who are very closely related and it's thus a more limited meaning than the word branch. Let's share the next page, Free State. Province of the Free State, Portfolio Committee of the Free State Legislature, votes in favour of the bill without amendments. Then the next one is Gauteng. Gauteng Legislature votes in favour of the bill with proposed amendments. If we look at item 7, the amendment proposed by the province is that in clause 5185, the word coherent be removed. This is related to the criteria for recognition of the Khoi, the Sun communities. And how it will read, as they propose, is that one of the criteria will be then that a Khoi Sun community, one of the criteria will be that they must have a proven history, currently it says a proven history of coherent existence of the community from a particular point in time to the present. The province, after the public hearings, is proposing that the word coherent be removed. And we are agreeing with that, Honourable Chair. We looked at it very carefully, and we agree that that word be deleted out of clause 518. Item 8, the province. Okay, I will not go into that one, Chair. If it's fine with you, it's a comment by the province. There is no specific amendment that is proposed. On the next page, item 9, there is an amendment proposed. It is to delete the words full-time in clause 31D. And how it will read then is that the seat of a member of the National House will become vacant if the member becomes, currently it says, a full-time member of a municipal council, provincial legislature, or a member of parliament. And we agree with the province that the word full-time can be removed. Because when you become a member of parliament, it is a full-time, it's automatically full-time. So we agree that that word be removed. It will also align this with other provisions in the bill where the word full-time is not used. In item 10, Chair, it's an amendment proposed by the province. This is about vacancies in the National House of Traditional Leaders. The bill says that when there's a vacancy in the National House, it should be filled within 45 days. The province is of the view that maybe the 45 days is not enough, and that it should be more than 45 days, or there should be an option for the minister to extend it. We do not agree with this. The 45 days is already more than I think what the a reasonable time. Reasonable time is usually seen as 30 days. The 45 days is in line with the existing National House Act. And we must remember that when the you first have your provincial houses, and they elect members to become then your representatives at the National House. So your provincial houses are already in place. So it should be very quick and easy for them if one of their representatives are no longer there at the National House. It should be very quick and easy for them to find a replacement member. So we believe 45 days is sufficient. In clause, in item 11, in clause 34, now, Chair, this is an interesting discussion. This is also about the National House. Currently, the clause says that a chairperson or the deputy chairperson of the National House may be re-elected. And it says that such a chair or a deputy chair may not serve more than two consecutive terms. Now, initially, if you look at our comments, we were saying there that this is in line with the current National House Act, and we believe it is fine. In other words, it says a member who is elected as a chairperson can serve two terms, but not more than two consecutive terms. But it also means, let's say my Honourable DG is a member of the National House and is chairperson of the National House for a five-year term, followed by another five-year term. And then Mr. Sitwale becomes the member of or the chairperson for the third term of 5 years. Then the DG can become the chairperson again in the fourth term. Now, after discussions, Honourable Chair, with the colleagues from the National House who are here, Mr. Sitwale, and also the legal advisor from the National House, we actually, as DG, we think that we actually agree with the province that the word consecutive should come out. In other words, it will mean then, if the committee agree that we remove that word, it will mean that a person who serves as chairperson of the National House can serve two terms, whether it's consecutive or not, but not more than two terms. So even if that person is there for 50 years, he or she will only be able to serve two terms as a chairperson. So we will include that in the C-list if the committee agrees, Chair. Then Kented N comments on page 5, from page 5. Again, Kented N also raises what we discussed, the very first item that we discussed, the title of the bill, so our comments are the same as that, that I gave earlier. Then item 13, I think, Chair, maybe I'll just also make a general comment. When we worked through these comments of the provinces in the negotiating mandates very carefully, we noted that in some instances, I think there's also maybe a little bit of misinterpretation of clauses and what they exactly mean. If we look at item 13, it talks about the decisions of traditional councils and the involvement of royal families in decisions of traditional councils. Now, the clause does not deal with decisions of traditional councils. It deals with consultations on the formula to be issued by the minister in respect of the number of members of the councils. So it's not about the decisions taken by the traditional councils. So I think this was maybe just a little misunderstanding of what the clause actually talks about. And that forum that is there in the clause is to assure that when the minister consults on the formula for members of a traditional council, is that it's a very inclusive process, and that the community is involved in this process of establishing the formula. Chair, item 14 is a comment by the province. There's no specific amendment that's proposed. Same with item 15, the same with item 16, and the same with item 17. Then, Honourable Chair, Limpopo on page 7, their comment says, provincial NCOP permanent delegates to negotiate in favour of the bill. And then they say, and I put it in brackets there, with the above inputs. They didn't really say with proposed amendments, they just say with above inputs. I'm actually not 100% sure what they meant with it, but we went through it very carefully. Item 18 is a comment, no specific amendment proposed, the same with item 19. Then item 20 on page 8. This is about the appointment of regents. Honourable members are aware that where the successor to a traditional leadership position is a minor, that you can appoint a regent to take care of the business of that community until this person becomes of age and can take over. Now, The province comments is saying that because the bill says that the position of regions should be reviewed every 2 years, they are saying that traditional leadership is not rotational, and by rotating regions every second year, it defeats the objectives of the institution. Again, I think there's just a misunderstanding of what the call says. It does not say it must be rotated, not at all. All that it says is every 2 years it must be reviewed, and the reason for that, if you look at the bill, is to see is there still a need for the region, does the region still meet the requirements, is the region still serving the community correctly. But there's nothing that says it, the region must be replaced, or that it must be on a rotational basis. Item 21, again, I think here it's a question of interpretation. It's about section 23 of the bill, or clause 23 of the bill. The province's comment says that the clause talks about the Premier must manage traditional council finances. Now, again, this is not correct. The clause does not require the Premier to manage traditional council finances. The clause requires of national and provincial governments to provide for legislative or other measures in respect of the monitoring and management of the finance of the councils. In other words, it's an enabling provision. It does not say that the Premier must manage the financial finances of the council. The clause does, however, go further. It requires that the national DGA, not the province, the national department, may monitor or must monitor the management of the finances of councils in accordance with clause 62, which is the general monitoring and aiding clause for the national department as custodian of traditional leadership at national level. So just to make it clear, there's nothing that says the Premier must manage the finances of the councils. Item 22. They're saying that this particular section 23.3A1 must be completely removed because there is no way that money and presence that's come the way of your traditional leaders must be recorded in traditional office accounts. Now again, this clause deals with money to be paid into the account of the council, traditional council, not the individual leader. And it therefore does not apply to gifts to the leader. It however applies to any contributions that is made to the council, the traditional council as such, and that must be declared, which is a principle that exists even if the current framework, and if you look at the code of conduct. Then next page, Chair, page 9, item 23, which is about clause 24. This is the interesting clause, and we'll get to it later also because we are proposing amendments based on provincial inputs on this clause. But the clause deals with partnerships and agreements. And strangely enough, this is the clause that probably led to the most discussions also last year during the portfolio committee processes. The province is saying that the Premier must play an oversight role and should not ratify agreements. Now, the purpose of this clause, if honourable members read that whole clause, is to make sure that partnerships and agreements are really beneficial to the communities and not to individual people in those communities. That's the whole idea. Remember, it's the traditional council that may enter into a partnership or agreement, and they should do so to the benefit of the community as a whole, not to an individual one or two people. And to make sure there are requirements in that clause that must be met. And we didn't just stop there. We said, once you've met these requirements, these partnerships and agreements must then go to the Premier to say, yes, I've checked. It does meet all the requirements and then ratify those agreements. Item 24, another amendment proposed by the province. This is about the referral of legislation by Parliament in terms of law to the National House of Traditional Leaders for comments. What the province is saying, or what the clause is saying currently, is that when Parliament refers a piece of legislation to the National House, the National House, they will consider this piece of legislation, and then they may decide to also get the input from the provincial houses. Now, the province here is saying that the National House should not have a discretion. It should be a must. But it, as we explained there in our in the last column there, we must remember that Parliament refers to the National House, and the National House must decide how they deal with it. Once the bill enters the NCOP processes and it goes to the provincial legislatures, then your provincial houses are also consulted by your provincial legislatures. So it is better, in our opinion at this stage, to at national level give the national house a discretion to say, look, this is a topic that we think a particular provincial house or all provincial houses should also give inputs on. But it's not necessary, and it doesn't mean provincial houses are excluded. They will be included in any event during the NCOP process. Item 25, Chair, is a comment. No specific amendment is proposed there. Then item 26, auditing. Now, Chairperson, the province is saying that they are proposing that the financial statements of councils must be audited by the Auditor General. Now, if honourable members look at the bill, as it was tabled in Parliament in 2015, that's exactly what the bill said. It must be audited by the Auditor General. But during the processes in 2017 in the National Assembly, the Auditor General addressed the Portfolio Committee, and they said to the Portfolio Committee, we do not have the capacity to audit every single traditional council. We must remember there's 840 traditional councils, there should be about 13 kingship councils, and etc. So they said we do not have the capacity, and they came up, the Auditor General themselves, with a proposal that the Portfolio Committee, that we just edited, but the Portfolio Committee accepted, to say it must be audited by a registered auditor in terms of the Audit Professions Act, I think it's called. And then the Auditor General should have the option to review any such audit if necessary. So this comes actually from the Auditor General themselves, and it was agreed to last year to change it. Then item 27, it talks about punitive measures. There's a clause 7, sub-clause 9 in the bill that says any person who purports to be a traditional leader but is not, is actually guilty of an offence. And the province is saying that there should be clear punitive measures in the clause. Well, it actually is there, because if you read our comments column where I quote the particular clause, it says it does make provision for such measures, and it states that the person is liable upon conviction to a fine or imprisonment not exceeding 3 years. So it is covered in the clause. Item 28 is a comment, no specific amendment proposed, Honourable Chair. Then page 11, province of Mpumalanga, Mpumalanga Portfolio Committee confers upon the permanent delegate the mandate to negotiate in favour of the bill without any proposed amendments. They do say it's taking into consideration the views of the community members, and we did go through that, but it was just like a summary of comments that people raised during the discussions. But they are actually saying that they mandate to negotiate in favour of the bill without any proposed amendments. Northern Cape, legislature vote in favour of the bill. So Free State, Mpumalanga, Northern Cape are the three that vote in favour of the bill without any proposed amendment. Now, Honourable Chair, we come to North West. Now, if you look at item 31, I just want to point out, this is a technical issue, maybe, but in their negotiating mandate, let me read it, they say the Portfolio Committee on Culture, Arts and Traditional Affairs mandates the North West NCOP permanent delegate to vote against the traditional voice and leadership book, considering the attached proposed amendments. Now, that's the one thing. They're voting against the bill, but they make proposed amendments. But also, just look at item 31. They refer to bill B6B of 2016. This is B23B of 2015. So they refer to the wrong bill, which in the negotiating mandate, which is the Indigenous Knowledge Bill, although the content talks to the particular traditional question leadership. But Chair, if I may ask clarity on the issue where, you know, they're rejecting the bill, they're writing against it, but with proposed amendments, how we should address it.
Chairperson, I think because they took a decision but not supporting the bill, I don't see us discussing that. Thank you.
Well,
Thank you. Yeah, see, I'm covered because it doesn't make sense. You normally have them saying we will support the bill with the following amendments. You don't say you're not supporting the bill and you want to give us amendments to it. I mean, it just doesn't make sense. So I agree with what the Honourable King is saying. We just disregard it. And if they want to do it, then that's not the way. We're not going to just try to survive, decide what they try to say and what they try to mean.
Thank you.
Can we get an advice from the state advisor? Can we get an advice from the state advisor on this issue?
Thank you, Chair. My take on this, Chair, I think I agree with the Honourable Member because it's contradiction on its own, to vote against and yet they propose the amendment. It is a contradiction to me.
I think, Chair, if I may add, we actually did provide comments there. So once the honourable members of the Northwest, they will see if they need advice, it is there in the columns, so they can take it further with their legislature. So we continue with Okay, thanks, Chair. Then we go to you will see there's many pages on the Northwest. Then we go then to page 18, which is Western Cape. Page 18. Everything before that is now the Northwest. Now, in item 50, the Western Cape, they confer on the Western Cape's permanent delegate the authority to support the bill, subject to the following amendments. In the case of the Western Cape, honourable members will see that when you read the third column with the provincial comment, it's comments. There are no real specific proposals to amendment, but we've looked at it very carefully, and there are things that we actually agree with. Clause 50 is just a pure comment that they've made, item 50. And then on page 19, item 24. Now, Chair, earlier, this is about the partnerships and agreements clause of the bill. And earlier on I mentioned that we'll come to it again, because when we read the comments made by the province, and thinking back to comments made by people over the last couple of years on this particular clause, we agree that even though this clause was extensively amended last year in the portfolio committee process, we agree that there is one important criteria that should be added if the Honourable Select Committee agrees. And that is to say that currently the clause says that when a partnership or agreement is entered into by, for example, a traditional council, it is subject to prior consultation with the relevant community, and it is prior to a decision of the particular council that they support this partnership or agreement. Now, based on the comments of the province and also other stakeholders during public hearings, we are proposing to add another criteria to say it is also subject to a decision in support of this partnership or agreement taken by a majority of the community members present at that particular consultation. So you will have, then, in other words, that there must be consultation with the community. The majority of members of the community present at this consultation must also take a decision in support of the partnership or agreement, and then the council itself must also take such a decision. So that is all explained there on page 19 and 20 in the column or the DTA comments, and there's one or two consequential amendments that will go with it. Now, the other one that I must explain as part of that, Honourable Chair, This clause must be read with clause 63 sub 22, which is a transitional clause. It was also inserted last year. And that transitional clause says that once this bill becomes law, we want to make sure that partnerships and agreements entered into by councils, not only the future ones, benefit to the benefit of the communities, but let's also look at what they've already entered into when this bill becomes law, and make sure that all partnerships and agreements are beneficial to the communities. So in the transitional clause, it says that they must be reviewed to see whether they meet the requirements of clause 24. But what we've realized while working on that, and I've also discussed this with Pumelele, I don't see she's here. Is Pumelele here? Okay. Oh, yeah. No, she just walked in. What we have discussed is that when you have this clause coming into operation, especially clause 24, we are saying that these partnerships and agreements must meet these requirements, notwithstanding the provisions of any other national law or provincial law. But that is not for the future. Now, in the transitional clause, we are saying that you can't, that particular reference to the other laws cannot be retrospective. For example, if a traditional council enters into a partnership and agreement in terms of, let's say for argument's sake, an environmental piece of legislation, we can't now go and say, 20 years ago, we can't now go and say, retrospectively, it must comply with the requirements. Yes, if it's not done in terms of a law, which the majority of them are, they're not done in terms of law, it's fine. You can meet them, you can test them, and so on. But not if it was done in terms of a law. Yes, it will be in future, it will apply, but not retrospectively. And we have proposed amendments there, Chair, that we put in there for the committee to decide whether they agree. Then, on page 20, that was a comment by the province. No amendment proposed. And then page 21, there's an amendment proposed by the province. This is about the resources to be made available to your traditional leaders. The clause says that, I think I must explain maybe to honourable members how it currently works. The Remuneration Commission, that independent commission on remuneration of public office bearers, they are currently making recommendations on the salaries, allowances and benefits of all public office bearers, including honourable members and then traditional leaders who are also public office bearers. And then I think honourable members know the president then makes a determination. But in the case of resources, your tools are straight. The law says that the commission, the Remuneration Commission, may make or must make recommendations. But there's no requirement to make a determination. Now, in practice, Honourable DG and my colleagues here will tell you that it leads to inconsistency in as how tools of trade are provided to the traditional leaders in the provinces. So this clause was brought into the bill to say, in the absence of a requirement in the current remuneration laws for a determination, we are making provision then that the minister may make such a determination based on the recommendations of that remuneration commission. Now, the Western Cape province says it should be, the bill says, after consultation with the premiers. The Western Cape says it must be in consultation, which means you need everybody's consent. Now, there's a couple of reasons why we do not support that particular proposal. One is that we are also aware that the Remuneration Commission laws are currently being reviewed. So there's a possibility that they may change that, and that in terms of their laws, that a determination will be made in future, as it is with the salaries and allowances. Now, if that is the case, and our bill says must, and their bill says must, their amended law says must, you have two laws in conflict with each other. That's the one issue. The other issue is that if you say in consultation with all nine provinces, it means that if a single province, any province, does not agree, you cannot determine, and you will not have uniformity, and you will not be able to apply anything, which means that traditional leaders and coastal leaders, once they are recognized, will not be able to get the tools of trade they need for their job. Then on the last page, page 22. This is a proposal that we are making as a department for the Honourable Select Committee to consider. The other bill that the committee dealt with, the Traditional Leadership and Governance Framework Amendment Bill, you will remember that this traditional Khoi Fan leadership bill that we are currently dealing with today was tabled in 2015. And then we came with that other bill, the Framework Amendment Bill, in 2017 as an urgent measure dealing with time frames. So it came 2 years later, and it was designed for the particular purpose of extending time frames to allow the traditional councils and other structures to be reconstituted. So what we have done, we looked at that bill as short as it is, very, very carefully, to make sure that the provisions in that bill are also covered sufficiently in the traditional voice on leadership bill. And they are, except for the one sub-clause. If we look at the subsection or clause 63.4 of this bill today, which is a transitional provision, we realize that in the other bill, the framework amendment bill, it's a little bit more detailed. So we are proposing to take that particular one as it is in the framework amendment bill and replace this clause 63.4 of the traditional course and leadership bill with the one in the framework, just to make sure that once this bill also becomes law, if it becomes law, that it's aligned with what we are doing in the interim legislation. Honourable Chair, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Any addition? Is that it all?
Yes, he has indeed, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you. Our members can engage. Question and clarity? Can I take your hands? If I say our members, including every honorable member that is here. Yes. Okay. Let me see hands. Let me see hands. Okay. Kind of. Like that, yes.
Yeah, but the MP.
Why now you're
fine?
Thank you, Chairperson. My first clarity, Chairperson, is the input where you can read, and at the end of your reading, you will see that the department. Why? What is the reason that means that the department doesn't support what has been the amendment, because this thing has been given to the provinces? And the department, in my own understanding, is an implementer of what has been talked by the traditional and Khoisan amended. That's my first question. My second question is, if these things that have been highlighted by different provinces, and this is the last mandate, because this session is going to the people, more especially the people who are going to work with this bill, why did they allow to spend so many time, and they, most of them, they don't support it? What are we discussing? Thank you.
Let me rephrase it, Chair, because I'll allow the officials to respond to that. It's clear what this was about.
No. Let's get the question and clarity.
The
chairperson of the committee.
Yeah,
okay. Okay, all right, remember that? Yeah, Eastern Cape?
Okay.
Is that Northern Cape or Eastern Cape?
Northern Cape, Chair.
Okay, sure.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I'm the chairperson of the COPTA committee in the Northern Cape. I'm just confused, Chairperson, because under the Northern Cape, there's no comments or input from us. And I think for the Northern Cape, this bill is very important. And I'm sitting with our document before me, and there was a lot of input from our side. So we are sitting with letters from different groups. So this document is a public document. And if someone in the community get hold of this document, it seems that we are not representing them well. So I have a problem, Chair, because we have a big representation of Khoi and San leadership. And our big problem in the Northern Cape was one of the names. Because in most of our the part of the Northern Cape, we have the Nama community. And that was a concern for us. So I'm sitting with our mandate here. And I just want to know why is it that nothing is here in this document. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Honorable Chair. My name is Nenawa, I'm New Zealand. Chair Cocta, Eastern Cape. Chair, one clarity, particularly to the committee. Because our understanding is that if we are given this bill as Section 76, which compels us to go to do public hearing, and we come back with what our communities are saying, would that be given to the department to talk to those matters and respond the way they've responded? Who is having the final arbiter on these matters? Because my sense, Chair, is that us as the portfolio committee is the one. We never had any negotiating mandate. Now the department comes back, you know, highlight technical matters as their response. Which means, in my view, the department is the one that do have, you know, final, you know, arbiter on this matter. And that political, that can be through. Right? That's the clarity that I think we need to be given. For example, Chair, most of the provinces are saying, we are not happy with this Khoi and traditional leadership bill, separate from the entire bill that speaks about traditional leaders. Because we are setting a wrong precedent. We are actually opening government. What happens when NAMA come back and say we want recognition? Would we go back and say, no, we will then include NAMA? Then comes another cry and say we want recognition, we'll do. That's political. That can't be on. So I'm saying the department, in my view, is raising technical matters that do not talk to, you know, the ability of our communities, because that the people who are actually raising all these matters, Chair, that's the first issue. The third issue, Chair, is that out of what we are doing as provinces, at least we must be given some sort of indication which, in my view, would not be technical. All their responses, in my view, they are technical. They don't talk to what our communities are saying. If we can be clarified on those aspects, I think we'll be comfortable, Chair. I believe the department is noting. Honourable member there.
Masizole Masela, Entshona Koloni, Western Cape. Yes. Beltele Mpuma Koloni, Mpangwa. Kwatera again, the Northern Cape. So that used to be the Cape Koloni. Yeah. I just want to say, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, and of course the guests like me, that when we went through the public hearings, people were expressly stating the issues that they had problems with the bill. And I've noticed that the brief by the department somehow presented a picture that we said we support this bill without raising the issues why the principle of this bill being supported. I think there are two things that must be separated. You support the principle of this bill because it seeks to address for the first time in the history of this country the issue of the exclusion of Khoisan communities, being the Griqua, the Khoisan, the Cape Khoi, Namas, and so forth and so forth. But now when we spoke after being briefed by the public, we then said, let us engage because we are here to do so, and see what the NCOP Select Committee and, of course, other provinces can achieve together in meeting some of the concerns that were raised. One was the issue, Chairperson, of the treatment of traditional leaders, the inconsistencies that exist. For instance, Section 7 of the bill, 7.1 and 7.2, speaks on this issue, saying that there is no recognition of kingship and queenship of the among the coefficient leaders. And that was raised by the stakeholders, no, not us. Then we're taking the mandate forward, saying that if this could be responded to, but the department says in the comments here, in the document that you have, no comments, no amendments. That is an amendment proposed. The technical people must put it together because they drafted this bill. So the honorable member from the Eastern Cape is correct. Whose decision is it? Is it the decision by the department? So then, so we are saying it can't be correct. The important thing is that we're engaging. This is a negotiating mandate. We ask and we need some answers about why is there inconsistencies. Because then it undermines equality that is recognized in the Bill of Rights of this country. The other issue, Chair, I think relates to the land agreements and all of those. And of course the control, which we raise that. Because at times you'll find traditional leaders taking decisions about very serious decisions about contracts that relate to land, and such decisions being decisions that should in fact and always be with the communities. I think that the last pertinent issue, which is very crucial, is what they've responded to as the last issue, and that is the issue of funding. But again, when I hear the response to that, it's quite a vague one. Chair, we were saying that we propose that the national fiscus should be, there should be a conditional grant coming from the national treasury. That then goes to provinces so that you don't have province A treating their chiefs or traditional leaders as kings or queens at a different status. And then you've got another province treating them differently in terms of the remuneration issue. That is going to cause havoc in this country. If that is not addressed, already it is a question that is being raised. You go around the country, you'll hear people are saying, but Uteni Sipatu are different, they will not ban. That question is being raised. You can somersault and say, no, it's okay. You know, these issues, you know, are historic in nature, but we're now in a democratic South Africa. We've got to address them. I think I'll limit myself, Chair, to that, because I was trying to elevate the issues that were raised. So we said in principle, we support the principle of this bill, and we hope that these issues are being arranged, are able to be responded to. And then I'm going back to the province to hear if this is how we're being treated by the department in terms of how they respond. What are they saying then in response to that? Because I'm simply the chairperson of the committee. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I concur with the previous speaker. The bill, Chairperson, is here to amend the Traditional Leadership and Programs Bill. And in principle, we support as provinces that these subgroupings must be included. I've got a question of clarity here. Why did we call this bill the Traditional and Leadership and Governance, and Traditional Leadership and Koisen Leadership Bill, when there are other subgroupings like the Nama, the Kurana, the the Griqua, Cape Coast, because now I just want to understand why Khoisan is which an umbrella name for all these subgroupings, or they are equal. Because to me, they are equal. Griquas are Griquas. The Namas are Namas. You see, the Kuranas are Kuranas. The Sen are Sen. The coins are coins. So now I don't understand why this bill was called the traditional leadership and coincidence bill. That is the issue.
Thank you very much, Honorable Medina.
Chairperson, thank you very much. The speakers before me really have covered me on the basis that as a unitary country, and secondly, we already have an act that governs traditional leadership. Really, Chair, to bring in divisive legislation through the back door, it may be unintentional. It may be unintentional. But the speakers before me really are making a very good point that we have an act. Why don't we bring an amendment to an act that already exists and include everybody under that act, Chairperson? So, I think here someone must go back to the drawing board. I don't know who that one will be, but somebody must go back to the drawing board and say, in the spirit of us as a unitary state, we are a unitary state, Chairperson, and we already have an act that governs traditional leadership. Now, one member said, we thought it would just be an addition, but if it's got its own name, some of you don't know what my clan name is. I can go back home and agitate very strongly that my clan also have a bill about itself. It's not going to assist us as a unitary state, Chairperson. I think really somebody, I don't know whether to say the drafters of the department or the legal people, whoever it is, but someone must redo the homework, starting with the naming of the bill. Thank you very much. Sorry, my lovey. The kings and the queens looks like these citizens we are talking about here are being excluded from that nomenclature. Looks like they are being excluded. Now, it doesn't help unite. It doesn't speak to a unitary state. Thank you.
I'm also happy because I was going to talk about the Kwazulu-Natal of Spain, Khoisan Selvan. But it's true. When the renamed on the fashion of everybody might. Because when you can say it's a traditional zone, Khoisan will again say it was before a traditional zone, and we're not in. How sure are we in? So it must be renamed to be able to put everybody in the spot. Whether even those who rejected the country, you must put them so that when they wake up one day, then they find themselves also in the So that is why I said the name is kept. Not even Khoisan. So that it must be able to take everybody. Because now Northwest is not saying, but there are kings and queens that side and what was the traditional in that
So that is why I want to talk about it. Then, because otherwise, if we don't do that, we're going to have differences again. We're going to have challenges. And we will be, they will point us out one or two and say, why do you adopt the birth without thinking about it? All we have to do is go and look. And when that name comes, all the parties will look under this name. Because if we don't do that like this, so they can say let the constitution change so that we must be able to. Another one is we've got national, provincial,
they don't call you
local. Three spheres of government. Now, if we talk about remuneration, we talk about the forces, the traditional, and it must be paid out live on the special the way we are paid now. Otherwise, if we don't do this, you hear most of us national, provincial, local, and the traditional. The numeration must line this with paid like us. No one is paid to do. Then maybe it's going to be better. But now if you say KwaZulu-Natal, this king is better, not worse, this king is better, not going to say this king is better. The other one on the region, they are going to kill each other. Whoever comes in, whatever name, can be able to. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Department, with your responses, and I hope we will help you. Thank you very much. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. I think I should start by pointing out that the process that we are following here, because after the consultations took place, we were requested to comment on the mandate. This is not us saying to the committee that we are the ones in charge here, and that whatever has gone before us, what we say.
Can you please stop?
Yes.
Through your mic.
So because after the inputs were received, we were requested. Yes. Just to emphasize the point again, that in terms of the process that we are following, after the comments were received or the inputs were received, we were approached as a department to say, what are your comments on the inputs that have been made? And that's why we have worked on this document, because we asked, put them in writing, what are your comments? The expectation here is that Parliament will still run with the process. At the end of the day, Parliament that is going to decide. But we are simply responding to a request to comment on the inputs that have been received. I think I just need to clarify that if the tone in which the document was tabled perhaps created that impression, then it is a wrong impression, because that's not the intention at all. We were simply tabling our comments to the inputs that have been received as requested by Parliament. At the end of the day, we stand guided by Parliament on where we go from here. In some of these areas, obviously, as honourable members would see, these are not easy matters. Do we simply say traditional? Do we say traditional and quaison? If we say traditional, is it in line with what the Constitution says? Are other groupings going to be unhappy that the title excludes them? We stand guided. But the comments we're making here, we're trying to address in our assessment what we see as a possible way forward on these issues. But again, I think will be guided by the committee. The same applies to the issues relating to, just to give an example, what the Honourable Member from the Western Cape was raising. We actually found that comment from the Western Cape very important when he talks about the partnerships. And that's why we're making the recommendation here that the bill does not deal with that at the moment. And we say that there must be a way in which we can address that concern. And we propose an amendment that says before these partnerships can be finalized, there must be agreement by a majority of the relevant committee members present at the consultation and then agreement within the council, because we recognize that there is a gap here that needs to be addressed. But we thought this could be a way in which we address the concern that has been raised, and maybe it does not go far enough. Again, we stand advised by the committee. But just to emphasize that point, Honorable Chair, that it's just a response from our side so that we can then get further direction from Parliament on what needs to happen from here. There are just a few other comments that Dr. Bester will make through you, Chairperson, with your permission. But I thought I should just make that overall comment as a starting point.
Chair, thank you, and thank you, Honourable Members, for the comments. Just a few things. I think each touched on the most important ones. The in the case of the Northern Cape, Honourable Chair of the Portfolio Committee mentioned that our document is not addressing proposed amendments, but I have the negotiating mandate here, and on the front page it says the legislature vote in favour of the bill. It does not say what proposed amendments. So, Honourable Chair, you will remember in the beginning we said we focus on where there are clear comments or proposed amendments as such. Just on that. But we did read the whole Northern Cape input. We did read. And it's, I can see from the Northern Cape the comments raised by communities are focused on the Khoi and the Sun community inputs. Some are quite interesting. But the also with the, this also applies then to the Western Cape to some extent. When we say in this document that we prepared for the committee's consideration and information, where we say that the province proposed amendment is where they, in their negotiating mandate, said very clearly, for example, let's say clause 10. Clause 10 too must be amended to do the following. In the Western Cape as is the case of Mpumalanga, which is possible without amendments and other cases, there are no proposed amendments to specific clauses. But it doesn't mean that we ignore that we actually looked at it, as you will see in the comments. Some of the honourable members raised the thing of the Khoi and the Sun kings and queens positions, which is a very important matter to be discussed. And the fact is, honourable members, that while you have people who refer to themselves, maybe sometimes as kings and queens of the Khoi and the Sun, there is no evidence, historical evidence, written evidence, nothing, that even the National Khoi Sun Council members will tell honourable members that there is no evidence that says there's a history of a Khoi and Sun king or queen. I don't know whether honourable members maybe saw on television more or less a month or 2 months ago, there were Khoi and Sun community members who raised certain concerns, and there was a particular gentleman from the Western Cape who said he's the Khoi and Sun king, and it was on television news. And the television news, SABC, had an expert, a researcher, anthropologist, who in that insert mentioned and to say that he's been doing research on the Khoi and Sun communities his whole life, and there is no such evidence, there's no history of existence of a Khoi and Sun king or queen. So for that reason, there's no provision in this book for a Khoi and Sun king or queen. But, honourable member, the kings and queens of our traditional leadership positions, they are in the bill. They are covered, they are there. And we must also remember, even if we just look at the current Framework Act, in 2003, when the Framework Act was promulgated, at the time, it made provision for kings and queens, but it did not make provision for kingships and queenships, you know, the entity. That was only added in 2009 when the Act was amended, based on the findings of the Nhlapo Commission, who said, yes, there is real evidence here of kingships and queenships. And then the Act, Parliament amended the Act in 2009 to bring that in. So what I'm saying with that is, At the moment, there's no evidence on the coins on Kings and Queens. Doesn't mean that in future someone may find some evidence somewhere, and then, of course, legislation can be amended to accommodate that. One of the provinces, I can't remember exactly which one now, Western Cape, actually. Western Cape mentioned that the bill, if you look at the traditional part, leadership part, and you look at the coin sum part, it looks like there are differences between the two. And the Western Cape goes as far as to even call it discrimination in the negotiating mandate. Yes, there are differences, because they are different. Their customs differ, their customary law differ, their leadership positions differ. It all differs. But there are also criteria that are the same, and they will be treated in terms of this bill, if it becomes law, in exactly the same way as our current traditional leadership. They will have the same benefits, they will have the same functions, etc. Now, the name of the bill, it was the very, very first item that we also discussed this morning, Honorable Chair and members. The name of the bill, there's been over the years, I want to go as far as to say hundreds of different proposals as to what the title of the bill should be. But as I said right in the beginning, remember that it must reflect what is the content of the bill. And the bill deals with two things. It deals with traditional leadership, and it deals with Khoisan leadership. Honorable member, on the issue of the Khoisan son, the groupings that Honorable Member referred to, you are actually correct, it's an umbrella term. Khoisan, if you look at the definition in the bill, is the Cape Khoi, the Griqua, the Kurana, the Sun, and the Nama. The Sun covered by the Sun part. The Khoi part of the name Khoisan covers all the others. They are all Khoi. And then under the, if you look, for example, the Cape Khoi, they have many, many other different subgroupings, Hesekwa, Kumkwa, Gaukwa, a lot of them. They are actually a very big group. But you are actually right, the name Khoisan is an umbrella term, which is an acceptable term by the majority of Khoisan communities. You will find, and I think honorable members may be found during public hearings, that here and there a community or two or a representative community would say, you know, it should be something else. But it is the most acceptable term, and the definition spells it out. I must also say on the title of the book, you will, if you look at some of the comments, even the negotiating mandates, I saw it in the Northern Cape, for example, where they just left this comment. There are even people who propose that the title of the bill should not even refer to traditional leaders, but just to Khoisan. So you have these very, very different views on that. But when the bill was drafted and went through the cabinet approval processes into Parliament, the National Assembly part, it was agreed that the title traditional and Khoisan leadership bill is the most appropriate. But it's up to the committee to, of course, change it if they want to, Honourable Chair. I just want to make sure that... Okay, one honourable member, I think honourable member, just you, who mentioned that we already have an act. The traditional and governance, the traditional leadership and governance framework act. Yes, it's correct, we have an act. But let me be very honest, and my colleagues here at the back who are more involved with implementation will tell you there are numerous challenges with that act from the implementation side. So, on the one hand, and remember that act does not make provision for the Khoisan at all. So, this bill, on the one hand, it reduces the Khoisan part, but it also, it's a total redrafting of the current act as far as traditional leadership is concerned to make sure that all these numerous implementation challenges are addressed properly. Now, you are correct in the sense that, yes, you can maybe go and take the current act and go and amend it. But an amendment bill of that nature will be extremely complicated, and it may lead to a lot of confusion. It was just felt, look, let's start, I don't want to say afresh, because it's not something that's totally new introduced for the traditional leadership, but let's rather have one piece of legislation that is clear and deal, and now also addresses all those implementation challenges. The salaries issue. In terms of law, there cannot be discrepancies in salaries of any public office bearer, because the president makes a determination. For example, then a senior traditional leader, wherever that person is, whether that person is in Limpopo or in KZN or wherever, is a same seller. It's prescribed. If there is any province maybe face a particular category of traditional leader more or even less than what is prescribed by the president, then it means it's non-implementation of the law. But the Remuneration Commission, they make clear recommendations, and then the president makes a determination by notice in the government cassette to say, these are the salaries for our kings, principal leaders, the headmen, the senior traditional leaders, etc. And in future, if the bill becomes law, they will do the same thing in respect of the Khoi Star leaders. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I think we need to get into a way forward. Maybe before we get into a way forward, anyone that you feel that he was left out? Yes.
Thank you, Sir President. Just on this question of the last part that has been responded to by the department. I just wanted to establish whether is there any view that is consistent with what the Western Cape was proposing, that we need to have a conditional grant. And this question that traditionally that are treated the same, let us not create a myth here. It's a fact they are not treated the same. The determination gets set out, but we know that there are some kings, for instance, who get treated like they are the king of other kings. So it's a fact. So I don't like this thing of, you know, we must always be as honorable.
In fact, I was too lenient to give you a second chance.
Yeah.
Now you abuse it.
No, the response, Chair, is I appreciate what the department says, but I don't want to downplay what the provinces are saying. It can't be done that. It's not fair. But what I was also trying to check in terms of what we proposed, I did not get the response directly, except to say that there's a determination by the commission, which we know. But we're proposing a specific amendment. I remember Dr. will agree with me that when they came to talk to us, they actually said, as a department, it's a very important view that you are raising because we didn't look at it. Same thing as that one of the contracts, which we appreciate. They said, hey, let us go back. Now, we don't hear when they come back what are they saying, as Chairperson, with respect, on this ring-fenced conditional grant that will then go is a determination with funding, not just a determination for provinces to cover. Because cocktails in provinces are currently submerged into a serious pressure of having to cover these kind of remuneration packages to the traditional leaders. On their own, they struggle to meet the demands of local government. That has been raised. So that's why I wanted to pick up whether as a co-opted chairperson in the Western Cape, will it be justifiable to say we'll stop providing support to municipalities and councillor training and all the other things because we must take now this budget that must be given for borehole water. We're going to give it to traditional So that is what we want to hear as a clear determination which they said they are going to look at when they go back. So that is a technical and a valid point to raise, Chair, but it's a very tangible point to make.
Okay. Thank you very much.
I think the department must prepare a thin list and include the views that are coming from the chairperson. Secondly, table that said list by tomorrow. Three, the select committee to call a meeting to adopt the said list. Four, all information, including minutes, to be sent to the provincial legislatures. That is our way forward. Thank you.
Listen, I'm looking on Eastern Cape imports here, and most of them, they said the Department of Traditional Affairs proposed amendment not supported. What will be the consolidated bill if most of the things that come from the provinces are not supported?
All the views of the chairperson that was presented here will be included in this bill list. All the views. Okay. Parliamentary legal advisors can give us a word on this. Parliamentary legal officers can give us a word on this.
Thank you, Chairperson. The name is Pumela Lengema. I think following from what has been said and the fact that I joined the meeting in the middle, almost towards the end, Chairperson, I think what we will do is to consider what the department would have provided and have our input in that regard moving forward. I thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Department. Thank you very much, Provincial Chairs. Thank you very much for your contribution. As department, the board is on your court. Just go back and do your homework again and come back so that you can move forward. Thank you.
Done.
Our members, the members of the committee, our agenda is still on. Okay. We are late.
Oh, I'm Thank you.